Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for coming. Thank you, Carola and Professor Hanan, and the conference organizers as well, for inviting me in the first place. I indeed feel very honored to be among this distinguished list of panelists and people who will be contributing more or less in this conference. Today I'll be talking about the challenges that face Egyptian journalism after June 2013. So when I was, when I was first asked to present on this sort of hardships that Egyptian press is facing right now, the first thing that came to my mind was, well, I'll be presenting in an event where one of my colleagues was forced to suspend her show, another decided voluntarily to do so, and one of my friends and colleagues as well was detained a couple of days before I came here by the military prosecution. I guess this is just indicative of the situation and the status that we're in right now. The past 2 years are certainly among the hardest phases that Egyptian press has faced throughout its modern history. Freedom of media and press in Egypt has been remarkably declining since the events of June 30th. Just to give you a little bit of understanding of how bad it is, this is the global map of Reporters Without Borders. And as you can see here, Egypt is colored with red, which is categorically the difficult situation countries. So, according to a number of remarkable and notable international human rights organizations that are concerned with the status of freedom of media and press in the world, Egypt, or the situation of the freedom of press in Egypt, is almost equivalent to Russia, Cuba, and the list goes on. By the way, for the year 2013, Egypt ranked number 158 among 180 countries. In 2014, guess what? We ranked 159. This year, the ranking will come out, I guess, next month. But what I was contacting with one of the people who used to work with Reporters Without Borders, right now, we would be 171 out of 180. But let's go back to some theoretical questions. Like, what do we mean by freedom of media and press, and particularly by freedom of press? UNESCO has, in 1991, they have passed a set of principles that shape the global understanding of what is it called the freedom of press. An ideal press would be independent and pluralistic. And but what we mean with independent is a press that is independent from governmental, political, or economic control, or from control of materials and infrastructure that is either owned by the state or privately owned. And the pluralistic press would be, or would mean, the end of all the monopolies of all kinds and the existence of the greatest possible number of newspapers. Now, to be honest, in theory, these principles were transcended more or less to the constitution, the Egyptian constitution of 2014, that guaranteed and recognized the rights to freedom of thought, press, and publication. Also, our press law that dates back to two decades ago has recognized as well the right to obtain and disseminate information, the right to non-disclosure of the identities of the sources, and to ensure an independent environment for journalists. This is more or less the legal framework that could be in favor of a free press in Egypt. Just forget about all of that. This has never affected the status of press in Egypt. This has never come to reality, especially after June 2013. After June 30th, increasing number of journalists are behind bars, either spending their sentences or awaiting justice. And let me just mention one thing here, which is very sad indeed. These three pictures are of journalists who are currently serving sentences or still awaiting justice. But the important thing is, for variable number, whether it's 35 or 60 journalists, I couldn't find more than 15 of these detained journalists. If you try to Google them or to Google their names, you wouldn't find anything. This is only what I could find. There is a smear campaign, security encroachment on the press. As you can see here in this image, Al-Watan, which is a newspaper, a widely spread newspaper, that is very well known for its allegiance with the regime and its support to the regime. In one of their headlines, the right one, it was titled "Sabah Aqwan Sisi," seven are stronger than Sisi. But then Al-Mukhabarat, just to cut it short, they ordered the confiscation of the newspaper, and then they were forced to publish it later than usual, to actually amend it to seven or "Sabah Aqwan Islah," seven are more powerful than Reformation. And there is also the deliberate targeting of field correspondents. However, it's very important to highlight and to underscore that the roots of these hardships could very well find the roots in the transitional period that followed the toppling of Mubarak. Of course, after January 2011, the local press has relatively enjoyed new margins of freedom, same as everyone in the society. Of course, these new margins were best manifested in the proliferation of a number of printed and electronic newspapers and websites. The press became overly politicized, yet more representative of the different social and political views. Like, there were the emerge of Coptic, Bedouin, and Nubian publications. And third, the emerging and the revival of new trends of journalism, like the citizen journalism and the investigative journalism as well. But let me be clear here as much as I can. These reforms, these slight reforms, were meant to be short-lived. They were basically expressing the political bargain that the regime had to do in order to maintain and to contain the public discontent. So these new margins did not reflect a true democratic transition. They were not representative at all of the regime's authoritative political agenda, and if anyone wants to go back to the reports that documented the status of journalists and media personnel as well in the SCAF, in the year and a half that the SCAF held power in, you would find a very rising number of violations to journalists and to field correspondents. So just to put it in simpler words, the maintenance of these new margins were only conditioned to the maintenance of the status quo or the political reality that was shaped right after January 2011. And fortunately, what I'm about to say is not very likable. It's not something that anyone would like to hear. But I would want to take actually from what Reem has said. This has never also been on the journalists' agenda. The first people who failed journalism were the journalists themselves. We're going to get to this later in the presentation, but the main question that I'll be trying to answer during my presentation is, did the journalists spearheaded the crackdown on the freedom of press? Of course, during this year and a half that I was talking about, there was like some sort of an over-politicization to all the society, part of which, of course, is the media. The political bias was very clear. Like, whenever I opened Reem's or Yusri's programs, I knew that probably they would be supporting our demands in the streets. However, it was very clear also that there were the emerging of another narrative that was trying to be produced by other TV hosts and other TV channels that were mainly funded by Mubarak's autocracy was also very obvious. But more importantly, the failure to secure independent sources of funding, and which definitely alluded to the dependence on the political allegiances. the professional misconducts that Yusri was talking about earlier, along with Reem Magid, included a number of technical issues. Now, I'm not a journalist. I don't hold a journalist or journalism degree. But I know from my work as a human rights researcher in a local NGO that used to work and still is working on advocating freedom of press, that reporters were very shy from reporting violations that either occurred to themselves or even to their peers. The creation of this state of fear within the press wasn't only the direct product of the autocracy of the ruling regime, but also was supported genuinely by the daily practices of the journalists themselves. To put it in simpler words, the most notable challenges from June 30th until now were this. I know this is hard to absorb for people who did not experience the same circumstances that we faced in Egypt, but forget all about the rule of law in Egypt. There is no such a thing. I know that many of you would certainly have questions for the panelists, for this one and, of course, for the others, about how the law would be integrated to basically support and guarantee the free practice of rights and freedoms. There is no such a thing. This is a political fallacy. These terms would be only used when our president, for example, would be visiting Berlin. So the two main characteristics that shaped the reality, the political reality after June 30th, were the complete absence to the rule of law and the monopoly of political activity. Of course, this was transcended in reality in the seizure of public place. Now, I don't think I'll bring anything new to the table, but everyone here, I guess, knows that part of the philosophy of any dictatorship, of any military dictatorship, is to invade the public space, to maintain the public movement as much as possible. The dullness and, I would say, the ugliness of nowadays Cairo, part of it has to do with that. You wouldn't find people actually talking to one another as much as they used to do a couple of years ago, or maybe even more. Concerts are only permitted, and football matches as well, by the approval of the military and the Minister of Interior. So basically, there is a complete seizure of public space. You wouldn't find social and individual factors controlling and invading the checks and balances the same way we used to have after 2011. But the first phase where the alignment, the political alignment between the press and the political regime was very apparent was in the regime's attempt to create an alternative narrative to the 30th of June coup. It's a coup. As long as I am here on this podium, I wouldn't call it something else. It is a coup. And this was very problematic to the regime itself because it has to do with its legitimacy. The legitimacy of any military dictatorship is usually forced by creating supportive narratives in the media and in the press as well. So the regime after June 30th, they basically, this is the only thing that they know, they turned, because they are genuinely not supportive of any political action, so they turned to their old, I would say, there were old friends and old allies, the media and the press. We have faced during the 5 or 6 months that followed the toppling of Morsi, a very cheap, I would say, campaign on everything that has to do with the West, with the West interests, with the Western investments, basically with anything that could put together in a place where you would create a narrative that Egypt is under a conspiracy, a global conspiracy. This, unfortunately, was supported very much by the local press. That's what I call the media McCarthyism. This is very sad to show, but right after, it's very sad indeed. Right after the economic conference, the global economic conference, You would see here a number of 6 or 7 newspapers. Most of them, ironically, are either privately owned or partisan newspapers that went, or their headlines were almost the same. Egypt is waking up now. Of course, it doesn't take a brainer to understand why is this kind of propaganda is basically propagated through the press. Ah, طبعاً. And then, of course, this led to a rising sense of xenophobia and hostility towards or against foreigners, and most particularly foreign correspondents. I had the honor to work on a report that studied the status of foreign correspondents in Egypt during the period from 2011 to 2014. And the one thing that was very common in all the testimonies that I had the first hand to was this. You could have created the narrative you want if you only were smart enough to avoid harassing us. No one would have had to speak about the violations you're committing on a daily basis if you have just left us alone. And of course, because our government is super smart, this is basically what you end up with. A case that is completely falsified, that stands no legal ground, and that has embarrassed indeed the Egyptian government internationally, didn't serve the government's agenda at all. But here is, I guess, a more important infograph. This is an infograph of the violations that I was just talking about that happened against or happened to the foreign correspondents. As we can see here, 184 violations happened in just 4 years. This is a huge number. And for this number to happen, it's no surprise that Egypt is ranked among the worst countries in the world for providing a healthy environment for journalists. But let's take a look. What is the most common category of violations? The physical assaults. This has to do with the invasion of the public sphere I was talking about. The government, and more importantly, the army government, doesn't want anyone to basically transcend any sort of information, even if this information would not contradict the press statements of the government itself. Forgive me, Dr. Magid, for saying this, but freedom of information in Egypt is almost like science fiction. Like when Professor Naomi was asking, how could this be integrated into laws? I was like, there is actually no answer to this. This is like super fantasies. This will never happen. It's never happened, at least. I don't know it's going to happen in the future. So the physical assault, as I was saying, were the most recognized category of violations. Also was coupled with the closure of Islamist and opposition websites and newspapers, one of which is Al-Hurriya Al-Adala. But more importantly, there were continuous security raids, illegal security raids on the premises of radio stations and newspapers. I was chatting earlier with friends outside the hall, and I was just telling them that in order to justify these security raids, the government and also the police, they had to smartly accuse the owners of these radio stations with charges that has nothing to do with their work. Because guess what? Law in Egypt does not offer for the indictment and, of course, the imprisonment of journalists and media personnel. So what they do is, they themselves, they break their own laws by accusing their detainees of charges that has nothing to do with their work. Like, for example, obtaining unlicensed Microsoft Virgins operating systems in a country, in a third world country, that 50% at least of its population is living under poverty line. They actually are looking for people who would be using licensed Microsoft Virgins. Funny thing is, I have an uncle in state security, unfortunately, but that's another story. And while I was asking him about, you know, this incident, he said laughingly that, guess what? I don't even use a licensed Microsoft Virgin. Anyway, this whole thing created a sense of self-censorship basically for the fear of political retribution. But it's very important to highlight that the self-censorship here was only marked by security understandings. Like, there were no ethical codes, and Reem can, of course, okay, and Reem, of course, could correct me on this. There is no, it's very, very shady area to understand what could you be basically talking about and what not in Egypt. It basically goes down to, all goes down to the security arrangements. These are very two important figures, I guess. This is Hussein Bagat, and nothing needs to be, needs more to be said about him. But this guy, his name is Ahmed Musa. I'm not going to talk about his professionalism. I think there are people here who are more capable of doing this. But let me say this. This guy was indicted by ordinary court in Egypt for basically insulting and contempt against a political figure, Osama al-Ghazali Harb. And guess what? 4 days later, he was leading the press coverage of President Sisi's visit to Berlin. This is for the people who are still wondering what is the status of the rule of law in Egypt. Good luck finding one. Just to basically go very quickly through the events, because I know that I'm very limited with time now. Article 35 of the newly passed anti-terrorism law, it basically stipulates that it is forbidden by law to publish any material that goes against the military's press statements and is punished, if any, by 500,000 Egyptian fine. Again, just to go very quickly, this is a guy, his name is Waqdi Khalid. Waqdi Khalid was detained on July basically being accused of illegally filming the funeral of the prosecutor general. Funny thing is, the prosecutor general, later on, they revised their decision and they ordered his release. The Ministry of Interior, on the other side, had to spend 2 weeks basically to implement the prosecutor general's order. 2 weeks, he was kept in jail for 2 weeks for no obvious reason. So this is the kind of environment that journalists have to face. I myself called dozens, if not hundreds, of journalists who were either detained or were part of violations, and they never wanted to speak out and to tell the truth about what happened to them or to their colleagues in some cases. I know I have certainly passed my time. I'm not going to take much, but let me just say this. I don't think you have failed your profession, and I don't think Mr. Hafiz or Mr. Yusri did. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have been here. I wouldn't have known as an Egyptian what a free media is all about. I think the ones who failed their profession are the dozens of the likes of Waqdi Khalid, who works, by the way, for a newspaper called Tahya Masr. This guy was detained for a month while working for a newspaper that basically its name goes along with the president's slogan. So you haven't failed anything. You haven't failed anyone. No human being would, I guess, would be able to take the psychological pressure that at least the three of you have taken. But the more important thing that needs to be said is that there is something called 25th of January. Whether they like it or not, and I'm saying they because it's them, it's not us anymore, and it has to be addressed this way. They feel and they believe that when people left the Maidan, everything is forgotten. No, we haven't forgotten. And if the repression, the current phase of repression is ongoing, and will keep going on for a while, this has got to end. And I don't think that the current impasse that we're in right now would last for long. Thank you so much.